I am here talking today with published author and Merrimack student, Haley Hall. Hi, Haley. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good today. So we're talking during Autism Awareness Month, and I have just met you. You are a fascinating person. You are a wonderful conversationalist. I think this is going to be a very, very fun talk.
Probably.
So you have a very interesting background. You mentioned that you were diagnosed late, and I've spoken to one other female who was on the autism spectrum, and they also mentioned that they were diagnosed late. So you were diagnosed at?
I was 14 years old. It's apparently very, very, very common for those who are, for females to be diagnosed late. We also present differently, very differently from males sometimes. So,
Any good examples of that or something that you can cite?
We don't have as much. So I'm not entirely certain about how definitely we do. We make better eye contact, I think, is one thing. We don't present with a lot of the normal autistic. Well, I guess I can only speak from my own experience. I wanted to be social. I really desperately wanted friends. I didn't understand social skills at all. And so I would get right up in someone's face and be talking as fast as I could, and they would be leaning back, and I would be leaning forwards, because I didn't know what personal space meant. This was a constant problem. And to the point where I really didn't have any friends until I was in high school. I had one friend in elementary school, and that ended very badly. I kind of didn't realize I was pushing people away from her, and she said, into fifth grade, she sent me a letter cussing me out. My dad read the letter, put it back in the envelope, and sent it to her mother.
Oh.
She had to call and apologize. But, yeah, I was diagnosed after that, though, in, like, the first year of high school.
Okay. So. And you're a transplant to this area.
I am. I am a native of Georgia. Actually, metro Atlanta area. Everyone always asks, oh, are you from Atlanta? I'm like, no. Not really.
So you came from Georgia to St. Louis. What was it like growing up, I guess, prior to being diagnosed?
So my dad would say I was one of those, like, I was hyper social, but I didn't understand. So, for instance, I loved people. I always wanted to talk to them. Didn't matter if they didn't want to talk to me, because I did not know they didn't want to talk to me. I was also very hyperactive. My dad's a pediatrician. He started taking me to a psychiatrist when I was 3 years old. That was actually ended up being a very bad idea. I was put on Ritalin because they thought I had ADD. I was three. At seven, I was again misdiagnosed with bipolar. I was seven. That is not diagnosable at seven. Late teens, early 20s is when bipolar shows up.
About that, yeah.
Yeah. And so in that vein of things, I was put on medications. I was on medications up until actually until November 2020, when I pulled myself off of them, and I am the happiest and most sane I've ever been in my life. But cause they kept increasing my dose because the amount of, it just wasn't working. And when you start getting on the huge doses of antidepressants or and like Abilify, and it's not working, you have to think, well, why is it? Maybe it's not psychological. I was not diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos until 2020.
Wow.
And yeah. So.
Now, what did getting the diagnosis of Asperger's mean for you?
Well, it actually meant it took quite a bit off my plate. In that regard, I went from being in almost special ed. I was in school for a bit. Ended up getting, due to a situation I don't want to talk about, got pulled out of a school where I was in regular special ed into another school, different county, that had what's called the North Metro program, which was for behavioral and learning disabilities, versus the regular. I know there's a name for it. I can't remember what it is. Kids with Down syndrome. Full on, the ones hard to take, that you have to learn how to take care of themselves. And I went from being a moderate B student or, you know, low student because I was having so much difficulty in my just connecting with people to being a straight A within a year. And part of that was I like to learn, but people made me nervous. So I went to, in the North Metro program, they have, they teach you social skills. It's one of the classes they actually have is social skills.
Oh, I bet that's helpful.
Oh, it was. It was. I was seeing a therapist who was also giving, it's like, I am very attuned to people's emotions, but I couldn't really explain why. I did face flashcards. Yes, they had a game. She had a Go Fish game we'd play with four different, it was like four, like instead of cards, they were the emotions. And of course there's a number, but each of the emotions had four different faces.
Oh, okay.
So four different expressions of anger, four different expressions of sorrow, frustration.
So
lots of that.
I would imagine that would be very helpful.
Yeah, it was. It was. And I think one of the biggest things I started, and this is something I've noticed about a connection I have with other people who are autistic and those on the spectrum, also known as the neurodiverse. But it's that I did not make eye contact when I was a kid. And my reasoning after, it took me about until I was at least 16 before I started trying, I learned how to look in between your nose, in between your eyebrows, and it looked like I was looking at you because I had to. It wasn't until I started feeling more comfortable with my own skin that I started looking in people's eyes. And because I could see what they saw in me and how I felt about myself. You can almost see the disdain or the frustration or the irritation in someone's eyes, even when they're trying to cover it up. Or you're looking at someone and you may be looking at them not realizing you're looking condescendingly. And so it's like, oh, it's okay. And you look at them, but your eyes are saying, like, you're okay. You're just
stupid. Yeah. Yeah. And
or less than.
And that is we talked a little bit about the idea of moving from autistic or autism spectrum disorder to neurodivergence or neurodiversity. Mm-hmm. And how has that change altered the way people react, mm-hmm. altered the way you think about being on the spectrum or being neurodivergent? How has that altered the way things are perceived?
So I've kind of felt this way for many years, but I want people to embrace their differences. I'm very different. I think very differently. I think very quickly. I think faster than most of the population. I also speak very quickly, which can be a problem. But being able to realize that just because you're diagnosed with autism, you are not less. In fact, you actually have something to contribute to society if you are given the chance to do so. I have a friend of mine, haven't seen him in years, but he worked at Savers, where I work right now. Moved to Canada, but when I got there, he would say things like, oh, I can't help it, I have autism. And after a point, I said, no, you, he said, it was things like bumping everyone in the back as we're trying to get his trash can to the back, causing some difficulties, and it was frustrating me.
Okay.
And at one point, I finally said to him, I said, like, yes, you can. He says, no, I can't, I have autism. I'm like, yes, you can. You know why I know you can? Because I have autism, and I know you can do it. And I believe in you. And within weeks, he was working on himself because he had a role model.
And not only that, but you provided the reinforcement that.
Yeah, it's like,
even though
in you.
You have
yeah, it's
or
not,
you
yeah.
are, you can.
Yeah, you can do it. You can do what you if you set your mind to it. And that's one of the frustrations in why we're doing this autism awareness versus, this is autism acceptance, Mark.
Yes.
And I get those confused. This is autism acceptance versus autism awareness, which is very often like autism speaks, which those of us who believe in the neurodiversity part of things do not like places like autism speaks.
I have heard such things.
Because they, like, Amy, who is the one at the access office in STL at Merrimack, she heard a radio commercial for Autism Speaks, and somber music starts playing, and it's all these quotes from parents saying, like, and then the the doctor told me my son had autism. And it gives this depressing feeling.
To be fair, any child presents challenges.
Yeah.
But autism presents different challenges. They're not necessarily more difficult or overwhelming.
Exactly. And one of the interesting things is, so on that note, I have friends who, they're friends of my husband, but a few weeks ago we went and hung out with them and their son. My husband's name is Michael. This is his godson, Michael. So Michael and little Michael. I am known as Godfather's wife. I don't even have a name yet. So he's a little over two and she is a pediatrician and, she's there trying to get him to use his words. He doesn't speak. The only word he actually ever uses now at all thus far, very quietly, is owl. He loves owls. But when I said to her, she's told me, and it was, she told me that this thing, that like, yeah, we're trying to get him to use his words. And I said, well, have you thought about autism? And I could visibly see the, like, stress of that word. She's like, well, we've got him in the early start program. I'm like, well, I'm like, I have autism. She's like, what? You do? And I'm like, yeah. And Michael, though he's never been diagnosed, he didn't talk until he was four. It's like, he's like a computer hardware engineer. It's like, and I didn't quite want to say this to her, but your husband probably is on the spectrum. From what I've seen of him, he reminds me a lot of my husband.
Does run in families. I think if we were to look really hard in a lot of places, I think more people would find that they are on the spectrum or closer to on the spectrum than not.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's so ridiculous about it being a spectrum. Truth be told, my mom said it at one point. She said she doesn't think there really is an increase in autism over the years. Those weird guys that used to just stay in their own apartment, like, weird guys as in, like, the old guy in his farm who had his little, he had his tricks. He was never diagnosed. My father-in-law. Classic. Classic autism. According to them. I mean, it's like, but they were not, now, because we're all so connected in a antisocial social media, sorry.
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
You're not really friends with a million people. You might have two. If you have two, you're lucky sometimes. But this, like, social, it's like, you are so connected, you start to see someone else's eccentricities. And then it becomes like, oh, that person has a problem.
Well, and now we have a name for it.
Yeah.
We can say, this is that.
Yeah.
And I tend to agree with you. I think that a lot of the, oh, they're just a little odd.
Yeah.
Probably were,
yeah,
are somewhere on the spectrum.
Albert Einstein.
Now, you had mentioned earlier when we were talking before this about something that you like to think about as far as nonverbal autistic people, because that is, that's something that a lot of people mistake when someone is nonverbal. They associate that with they can't speak, so they can't think, or they don't understand. And that is far from the case.
It is. And actually, that's one of the major things I want people to be aware of. Is the people around you, it doesn't matter if they are banging their head against a wall, screaming, whatever. They're not stupid. In fact, there are now books written by nonverbal autistics. People like Carly Fleischman. I can't remember the names of the other ones. She's an amazing individual. What she has is aphasia. She can't speak. She does all these things. She was asked this question, she does it by typing. It takes a long time because she sits there and hunts and pecks. There is no facilitated communication. Nobody is touching her. So it takes, she'll sit there and hover. But the question was asked, Carly, why do people with autism stem? Why do they bang their heads, rock, flap their hands? Her answer was, and I'm paraphrasing, I take a million pictures of a person's face every minute. It's overwhelming. We start creating output to mask the input. If you think about, and from my own experience, I am aware of every sound in this room at this moment, individually. I cannot actually filter them out. when I'm in a crowded place with a bunch of conversations, I can hear everybody's conversation, and sometimes I'm inputting on all of them by accident in my head or out loud, which gets me in trouble. It does. I've been told to stop talking.
Understood. I've heard that once or twice.
And it's just like, it's, imagine all of that. And for me, I mean, I already have a lot of that. Imagine the ones that have so much that they can't handle. There is no filter. And that's what's happening. I've had it happen a few times. I have this innate ability to connect with those with severe autism, for example, like little Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Because first off, I am engaging with him as a person, not just with him as a child playing with a child. I look him in the eyes, and it's like amazing at how quickly he starts to smile at me, because I am looking at him with understanding and love, and you are worthy, and I don't think you're stupid. I'm not going to talk down to you. Yes, you're 2 years old. I'm not going to talk to you like a 20-year-old, because that's stupid. It's not a good idea. But you are your own person. You're not stupid. There's nothing wrong with who you are. And this has happened with adults as well. People I've never met before. I was at Point at Baldwin Commons at one point in going to the pool there. And there was an autistic man walking around in the pool doing, not focusing and looking down, obviously very much on the far end of the nonverbal autistic. Didn't talk. His dad was there, two older gentlemen. At one point, I was watching him, just like looking around. I'd say hello to him. He'd kind of look my way a little bit, but not look me in the eye. Finally, ended up in an area where we ended up talking. I was talking to him and looking him in the, like looking at his face. And of course, in the beginning, he's not looking at my eyes. And eventually he starts doing this kind of side glance. And then he is actively making eye contact.
Wow.
And I'm talking to his dad about how much I've loved St. Louis or whatnot, but looking at him, engaging with him. By the time he left, they had to go, and his dad gets out. He reaches over to shake what I think he was shake my hand. He shakes my hand and starts to try to pull me with him. It was the cutest thing. He's like, come here.
Come with me.
Come with me. And his dad was like flabbergasted. He's like, no, leave. She can't come with us. He's going, just looking kind of sideline, looking at me. And I was laughing. I'm like, no, it's okay. I have to stay here. Looking him in the eye. And mm-hmm. Finally, he's like, waves and leaves. And I was laughing about it later. I'm like, oh my gosh, I got an autistic dude who's got a little crush on me. It's funny. It was cute. But it was that connection.
It was the connection.
That he probably doesn't get that often at all.
No, and it's really difficult to try to explain mm-hmm. to neurotypical folks
yeah.
that connection means so much.
Oh yes, it does. It does. And even for myself, it's like being seen, it's like most people, when they learn or I tell them, yeah, well, yeah, no, I have Asperger's. Oh, you're so high functioning. I would not have known. I'm like, it's because there's nothing wrong with me.
Exactly.
I kind of want to say that. And it's just like, frustrates me.
I do like, though, the way that you described it, because I think for people who are neurotypical, I don't even notice the sound of the highway outside the window. I don't notice the sound of the lights buzzing overhead or the ventilation system whooshing. I notice it. I just can...
You can filter it out.
Filter it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's almost like if you were to put a microphone in the middle of a room mm-hmm. and collect every sound unfiltered, that would drive you nuts.
Yes.
But when we talk about neurodivergency, which I love that term because it basically means that you sense things differently than a lot of other people. One gentleman that I spoke to, our STEM dean on this campus, his son is on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, it's almost like where you can see 16 million colors, someone with autism can either see 8 colors or billions, and it's either overwhelming or it gets so overwhelming that they say, okay, we're going to cut it down to 8 because we can handle 8.
Yes.
And I like the idea of the sound thing because I'm kind of in sound, but I think that's a great way to put it so that people who are neurotypical can understand that and grasp that.
Yeah, and one of the nice things, and I actually, yes, I can't filter stuff out very easily. I do a lot better than most people do. I can ignore it. I can still hear it. I could isolate which sounds are coming from which direction as well, which is a little strange. I echolocate sometimes to find things.
Ooh, that's cool.
Birds. Yeah, it's kind of, well, like, not literally echolocating, but I can figure out where a bird is, which tree or where that bird actually is if it's driving me nuts and I want to figure out what type of bird it is. So I see everything all the time. And I never even thought about that other people might not see as many colors definitions. There are so many different shades of green in a single inch space of grass than anybody would ever realize.
Try looking at a leaf.
Oh my gosh.
Those are insane.
The veins are amazing. Snowflakes. Every single snowflake from the beginning of time till the end is unique. The massiveness of that amount, it's like, that's my favorite little thing that is just amazing. But what I was going to say, though, is one day a few months ago, I think it was in around December or November, I was heading to, from Merrimack to Illinois to see my in-laws. And I'm driving down this highway. It's storming outside. And I am the only person, I think, in the entirety of St. Louis that saw that there was a rainbow. Yes. It was at like 4 p.m. The sun was setting. It was so cloudy. I'm talking to my mouth. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a rainbow. And it was a perfect arch. And it was, the colors were so muted because there was not a lot of light. But it was a rainbow. And I'm like, I looked everywhere. Did anybody get a picture of it? Has anybody else seen it? I'm not crazy. It was real. But everyone was so focused, they couldn't see it. And I could see it and stay focused. That's the cool part.
Haley, was there anything else you wanted to talk about today or you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, so I'm going to put a plug in for my favorite movie on autism, which is Temple Grandin. It's an HBO film starring Claire Danes. She does an incredible job. But the best part about it is that it shows her. It shows what her, like how her family and everybody else saw, and they're like, oh, the stuff she was doing and how crazy it was. And then it also has what's like over, like printed over on the video, what she is seeing. So when she's opening this thing up and down, up and down, up and down, they're like, oh, she won't stop. And you see in her head, she's looking at the angle of how it's doing and calculating it and using that for later. It's really well done. It's one of my favorite scenes in that movie.
Yeah. Temple Grandin is amazing.
Oh, yes,
she's fantastic.
And Temple herself said that Claire Danes did such a good job. She said it was like, she couldn't even see that it was an actor, which is very like unnerving for her. She's like, it was like me as a kid.
Unnerving, but a great compliment to yes. Claire Danes.
Oh, yes. No, it was insane. It was amazing. I love that movie. And then a small other little thing. You mentioned that I'm an author. A published author. I will note, yeah, I am not a self-published author. I had a book of poetry and art that I wrote in my years here. I was a nun for 5 years. It's been an amazing ride. I went from being someone my father was told when I was 5 years old I should be institutionalized. I would never drive a car. I would never have a job. I would never, never do anything with my life to being a published author at age 35 with 3 more books on the way. But that book is available through my website if anybody is interested in looking at it.
And the website, if somebody wants to find out more about you or the things that you mm-hmm. do, would be?
HaleyHall.art. That's HaleyHall.art.
Haley, thank you so much. It's been wonderful talking to you today.
Absolutely.